The Dalai Lama's teaching is replete with detail about the actual process of dying, and also with practical advice. I gain many insights into the gradual collapse of consciousness and learn much that later turned out to be very useful. While my father and mother were vacationing at their small winter home in Florida, my father had a stroke. He was 81. I was far away in Vancouver, teaching at the University of British Columbia. So when my three brothers went to Florida to visit my ill father, I stayed in Vancouver. We were all very relieved when my father rose from his comatose state and even returned home. However, by the time I arrived a few weeks later, after my brothers had left, my father was back in the hospital, comatose again. One day he was lying on his back and he opened his eyes. He turned and we began gently talking. At one point, with a playful gleam in his eyes, he said, "You wouldn't believe what's going on in this hospital." Wondering what he meant, I happened to look up at the television at the foot of his bed. A steamy hospital soap opera was on, and I noticed that the hospital had put a small speaker on his pillow. While in his coma, he had heard all those shows. After a while, I told him the source of his ideas and later turned off his speaker, remembering the Dalai Lama's teaching that near the time of death, it is most valuable to have someone remind you of virtuous thoughts. A few days later, my father took a turn for the worse and slipped into a deep coma. Visiting one night, I found that the hospital had moved him to a different room. This time, the television was blasting out a quiz show. I wanted to turn it off, but was told by the nurse that it was a favorite of the nearly deaf man in the other bed. Confounded, I sat at the foot of my father's bed, wondering what to do. The TV roared a question about a ship that had sunk at sea. So I figured that at least I could engage the other man. "Do you know the name of that ship?" I shouted. When he did not move a muscle, I realized he was comatose too. But my father sat up in bed and said, "The Andrea Doria." He was lucid and had been listening all along. I turned off the TV and we went on to have a nice conversation. He was his usual, contented self. He asked for crackers and milk, which the nurse provided in a particularly tender way. We chatted for a while, and as I left, I said, "Shall I say hello to Mother?" "You bet," he replied cheerfully. The hospital called my mother early the next morning to tell her that my father had died during the night. How relieved I was that before he had died, he had come to his senses with his spirits restored, and that the TV was silent. The hospital had left my father's body in his room alone. I went there and, remembering not to disturb the body, sat and kept silent because I did not know his particular vocabulary of religious belief. Just by being there, I felt I could support him on his journey. A year later, my mother suffered what was probably a stroke. She dialed the home of my brother Jack and his wife Judy. Jack was away, and when Judy answered, Mother said she felt terrible, had a headache, and she kept talking in a scattered way. She said she felt faint and might be sick. Then her voice faded away. Since Mother did not hang up, Judy ran to the house next door and called the rescue squad. Subsequently, the hospital brought her back from death's door three times, each time leaving her struggling to communicate. Seeing her incoherent struggle, I remembered that the Dalai Lama had spoken of the need for friendly advice that could evoke a virtuous attitude, and I approached her bedside. I knew that her special word was spirit, So I said, "Mother, this is Jeff. Now is the time for the Spirit." She immediately settled down and stopped struggling. I gently repeated, "Now is the time for the Spirit." A few days later, she died peacefully.